Today is going to be the day that we're going to throw it back to you. And by now, you should have somehow realized what you got to do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire in your heart is out. I'm sure you heard it all before, but you never really had a doubt. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
Oasis, man.
Wow.
Nice.
There you go.
That was great.
That was awesome, yeah.
That was awesome.
Wow. Yeah.
Well done. Nice. I wasn't expecting that, Phil. Were you nervous? You weren't nervous?
Listen, I picked a song where I couldn't screw up the lyrics.
Is that what it was?
That's all it is.
Well, thank you for opening up the show that way.
All right, that's great.
That's
thank
awesome.
You. Thank you
Welcome,
for having
guys.
Us.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming into the studio and having a chat here. And like we were saying just off mic, that I haven't had a big toy, small toy, equipment, rental place on the show yet. So we got a lot to talk about.
We're super excited.
Yeah, for sure.
So I want to introduce you guys. So I got Phil on my left and I got Camille on my right. What are your official titles there?
I'm the president and CEO.
Okay.
I'm the director of sales.
Okay, awesome. So we got Edge Construction Equipment.
Edge One Equipment Rentals.
Oh, sorry, Edge One Construction Equipment. And then you can find, the emails is Phil at Edge One, sorry, Phil at Edge Equipment.
Phil at edgeone.ca.
Yeah. Why am I getting all this confused?
Sorry. It's okay.
Phil at edgeone.ca. Yep. And then Camille is yours, Camille at edgeone.ca. And then you can find them on IG under Edge One Equipment, Facebook under Equipment Rentals. And then they're on LinkedIn and Twitter. And their phone number is 1-800-216-6663. I got to do a quick shout out to Rob from Galaxy Plumbing. I'm wearing his tee today. And thank you very much for the gift. So a future show, I'll be wearing yours as well.
That's awesome. No problem.
So High-Tech Concrete Cutting is a leading provider for all concrete scanning, x-ray, cutting, and coring throughout Ontario. They pride themselves in providing highest quality service in a safe manner, on time, and on budget. With the background, knowledge, and support of more than 30 years experience from the owner Dan St. Ange, there is no job that they cannot quote or complete. Their fleet is equipped with top-of-the-line trucks and equipment, which eliminates any uncertainty for downtime and allows our highly skilled crews to complete your project without delays. Choose High-Tech Concrete Cutting for your next project and see the difference when dealing with the industry leaders. Find them at www.hightechcutting.ca and on Instagram at hightechconcretecutting. Looking for cutting-edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than ElastiChem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over three decades, ElastiChem stands as an industry-leading supplying contractors across Canada with top-grade closed-cell, open-cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed cell product. Time is precious and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by ElastiChem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. Time to sign up for Phil, the free construction marketplace and load tracking app for developers, engineers, and all contractors working in the civil construction industry. One other thing to mention is business and facility listings. Phil has the most complete database of quarries, pits, plants, and depots in Ontario, including all of the big names. So if you're looking for concrete, stone, asphalt, whatever, you'll be able to find it. You can also add your business listing or claim it. It might already be on the map. Sign up for free on the website at www.getphil.app. That's www.getphil.app. You can also search Phil in the App Store. Construction pros, brace yourselves for a revolutionary experience. HTGNA, your ultimate destination for state-of-the-art concrete floor preparation equipment, is about to change the game. Our model, surface preparation, is not just a task. It's our expertise, and your satisfaction is a guarantee. HTGNA isn't your average, it's a commitment. Our line of concrete floor preparation equipment stands tall as the epitome of industry excellence. Ready to take your projects to the next level? Dive into htgnorthamerica.com for a glimpse of innovation. Lock in a demo now and immerse yourself in the HTGNA experience. HTG North America, surface preparation equipment is our expertise, your satisfaction, our guarantee. How long has Edge One been around?
24 years.
Woo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Family owned and operated? Sort of?
I like to say independent Canadian owned and operated more than family.
You started it or?
Yes.
Why'd you start it?
Right? Good question. It seems just so it's a male-dominated industry. And to say you work in a male-dominated industry is a statement. This here is as male as it gets. It was an investment opportunity for me. And shortly thereafter, the person that had, it was purchased from the estate of a person that had deceased. And shortly thereafter, that person passed away. And it was time to jump in, learn, really learn something that I had no background in.
Where were you coming from?
I'm from Toronto. I was in healthcare. So zero exposure to
healthcare, to equipment rental.
To equipment rental, yeah. But I think it's being an entrepreneur. And learning and being and having the ability to pivot as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And it was also, oh crap, all my money's there. So I have to figure this out.
This was one shot, get in there and it's a little scary, no?
It was it actually started on a VTB.
Okay.
So it was 50% down, 50% on a VTB. I still had a lot of commitment at the time. And yeah.
How big was it then?
Or
how little was it then, I guess?
So it was one location out of five, and the other locations were sold. So it was fairly small, but at the time for me, I was 29 years old, it was larger than life. You know, to be 29 and to take on debt and to have a stern warning about this VTB and having to clear that and source equipment. My first purchase was in, I think, May of 2000. And it was for John Deere financing and them looking at me going, where'd you come from and what do you want to do? And I said, I want to buy a couple of skid steers. And I think the way it works is if I don't pay for them, you take them back. So it's a win-win situation. And that's how I got started.
You had to explain to them how it works.
Who takes a chance on a young person that has zero background in construction?
Well, how do you grow the industry if you don't take that chance?
You know, I think that people from afar will say hi, but I don't know that I want to loan you money. Lending is an issue more so now than
But if you were rolling in their same age, same background, but as a man, would they have questioned any of that?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
I talk about these barriers a lot about being in the industry. And I mean, for me, it's not as glaring. And I think it's just because of my personality, because I don't pay attention to that. I call it noise.
You don't see it.
But I don't see it as much.
No.
I certainly don't anymore. I think perhaps when I started at first, there was a lot more that I might have ignored, right? Coming out of Toronto, coming into the Hamilton area, coming into construction, and not just light construction or tools, into heavy construction, into heavy equipment. Remember, like, walking up to a loader and the wheels taller than you, and the buckets, I'm so insignificant around these things, and taking on debt, right? That's a big thing. But yeah, no, I was ready for it.
Has the trade person changed much from then to now?
It certainly has.
Yeah? In what way?
So I think the way we communicate was the first thing. I'm going to age myself. Way back when, we carried a cooler, and in the cooler, we had wine, tomato, bread, and cheese, right? That's how we went to work. We've had to take the wine away, right?
Listen, we always fed the babies when they're sick wine. That's how they got it.
Wine for sure.
And then if you did something wrong, you know, your superintendent would be foaming at the mouth and using some vulgarity and the yelling and the screaming and cement trucks on the way and hurry up. And we just don't do that anymore. We just don't do that anymore. And now a lot of the trades are coming through proper schooling. They're coming through from the union halls. So I think the way that construction works, the way we interact, it's completely different.
I agree. Yeah. It's gotten better that way. Yeah. I totally see it.
There's definitely a lot of information communicated now in real time.
Pull the mic a little closer.
Oh, sorry.
Definitely
a lot of communication now communicated in real time. Emails, texts, all stuff that before was never even a thing. I have tradespeople that, you know, back in the day, they would definitely call you, and now you never even hear their voice. It's all email based.
I kind of missed that.
It's something that I'm sure will come up shortly. That is very important to us. We're a very big relationship based company. I still think relationships are super important in the industry. You know, going into Home Depot and not knowing somebody and just buying something is one thing. And I think it's important when you deal with people to know who they are and what they're about, know their character, their loyalty.
What they're planning.
Absolutely.
How they're going to grow their business.
Absolutely.
You'll give them some insight, whether they take it or not.
To the point, and Camille can attest for this, is that at some point in relationships, you start to become friends with these people, right?
And you're not motivated by money. You're motivated that you want them to do well and better and grow, mm-hmm. and you want to see them hire on more people, which means that they're expanding, which means that they're doing well.
There's definitely a win-win
For everybody.
That when you start building these relationships, you know, you're right. We think about money sometimes is not so important. At the end of the day, we're here to make some, but there or your customer or client success in turn becomes your success.
Yeah.
And so that's what you both fight for together, right? You have a mutual agreement or idea that that's what's important, right?
But to go back to your earlier comment about has it changed a little bit, and on the funny side of things, we had to look at it two different ways. We market two different ways. We have the older contractor that no matter how much social media we use, no, it doesn't work. I want to pick up the phone and I want to call you and I want to tell you I want a roller and I want to hear on this day.
I agree.
And we've tried Twitter. We've tried putting alerts out there. You know, it doesn't work. Go on an online portal and look up your account. It doesn't work. I want a call and I want a human on the other end answering my calls, right? And then we have the younger generation that...
only wants to communicate.
Only wants a communication. Mm-hmm. We both, respectively, we have clients that on an email, there's 20 people CC'd in this. It's going through the organization, right?
Wow. Oh, yeah.
And so everybody needs to know that this email has gone out and this piece of equipment is going there. And so we're dealing with both. And that's, I think, that's the beauty or the benefit of dealing with an independent company, because we can custom our service to fit the client's need. And that's one of our big selling feature. We'll meet with our clients and we'll say, what exactly do you need? How do you operate? What is your purchase order system looks like? Where do you want us to report to you? Do you want an electronic copy of every contract? Do you want to know, you know, do you want to know when equipment is being moved? Because rental is very unique, because equipment could be left on site. Equipment could be stolen. Could be damaged. The liability is huge.
Yeah.
It's a very tricky business to be in. And we can't have a cookie cutter operation, because if we did, we wouldn't survive.
No, it's customizable. You have to treat every client
like
construction. It's custom.
Correct. And for us, even more so, because our competitors are giants. In my office in Hamilton, I'm surrounded by the nationals, the national chains from mm-hmm. the U.S. So we have to find a way to compete. At the end of the day, my job, and I'm more in the heavy equipment, is to rent heavy construction equipment. I'm renting an excavator. And what I'm doing is no different than what my competitors are doing. We're renting equipment. We're renting excavators. What makes us unique?
Do they care that you're there, or do they consider you part of the community, or do they look at you as competition? Because everything that's small has a prospect of becoming big. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, is that the goal where you might at some point be a competitor to them and they don't like that?
I think we compete on a certain level with them, and they definitely, or the bigger chains might see us sort of as a pimple, let's call it, yeah. right? Yeah. But we're definitely there. A lot of times what I like to, I mean, and I tell Camille, I go, you know, we're a certain size customer and we understand what we are. There's no sort of illusion of what we are or not. And don't kid yourself. Like we have a client list sometimes that I look at it and I look at Camille, I go, it's almost like we have no business having this kind of client or this size client, because we do that well. There is a definite client out there that wants a certain type of service, a certain type of relationship, a certain type of one-on-one, and there's value there and people see that. Our competitors or what we would call people in the same industry, definitely look at that. And like a lot of the smaller rental outfits, it's the same thing, right? There are other smaller companies that have certain client lists where the big nationals probably look, wow, like what are they doing that we're not doing that they have these kind of customers?
I think it's primarily the relationship.
It is definitely. Yeah.
Like I respect the relationship. I still respect the phone call. I still respect the handshake. I still respect the word. You know what I mean? Your word is your bond kind of mentality. That's still construction. I hope that will be the future of construction.
And as you become bigger, and I'm sure you see this with a lot of corporations, and it's good. I mean, we all look to grow, but it does become a little more difficult to control that sort of thing as you become bigger.
Yeah.
Right? More people, you're thinning out that sort of relationship idea, become maybe more robotic in terms of the way you operate. I'm sure that works and that's fine. It's not what we're about, for example, right?
Should construction in general try to quantify the benefits of relationships?
I think construction in my time, it changed. One aspect of it changed, not for the better, for the worse. And construction became a highly litigated area to work in.
Yep.
And so years ago, I remember sitting in a boardroom of a large contractor at the time dominated the roadwork industry. You couldn't go anywhere without seeing their trucks. And at that time, they had already built in. We have several in-house counsel. We already carry a percentage of the bid just for the purpose of litigation, right? So I think it took the fun out of construction a little bit when we look for ways to not pay. And then when we started to work for the municipalities, it shifted again. Then we found this liquidated damages, whether it is possible to meet those deadlines. So now you have a situation.
Penalties and stuff?
Penalties, right? It's raining. You can't work. So you're behind schedule. Well, you're going to get hit with liquidated damages, right? And then we have chargebacks that came along. So now we're going to give you chargebacks because, you know, we're splitting the cost of garbage bin. Well, we're an equipment rental company. We're delivering equipment. Why are we getting... Why are we sharing?
You were learning all this
the
in
cost.
The first year or two of construction?
I think the first 5 years, I was just learning what tools are. I remember the first time I answered the phone and someone asked me if I had a vibrator, and I was like, excuse me? Well, there's such a thing as a concrete vibrator, right? So those are moments that you
get
have
a little
to
hair weak.
Every concrete person I know has a vibrator.
But
they don't put the word concrete in front of it.
That's the problem.
And then, you know, also everything has three names, right? Like
it's true.
A helicopter, you know.
You have the trials, European version of it, and you have the Canadian version of it, sometimes the American version of it.
Right? Yeah. So it takes a lot. So I spent my time learning that and I think the first few years it was fun, and then as you grow, there's this cutoff for a lot of companies. As you grow, you have more employees, your numbers are bigger, and you no longer fly under the radar. So then my job shifted from that fun interaction with the clients and being creative, and then I'll talk about a little bit more about what makes us so unique. But it shifted into regulation and reporting and dealing with red tape.
And you're totally right, it's not fun.
It is, you know,
the love of construction is not there.
Every step of the way, there's something that I'm reporting or something that I have to meet. I spend most of January renewing things, right? And so it's necessary. It keeps us legal. It keeps us safe. But there's so much red tape that sometimes you get bogged down by that. And just to be able to educate myself and constantly be on top of new rules and regulations, right? Whether it be labor laws, whether it be the trucking industry, you know, when we first started, we reported, because we have a propane filling station, we reported to TSSA, you know. 5 years later, I'm reporting to Transport Canada. You know, you're dealing with audits. Like, it is nonstop. Mm-hmm. So it can be a little tricky, but the bigger you get, you build more people into the structure, and you make it easy, right? You're following along. You're not waiting to be caught. You're staying on top of things. So that helps. But, yeah, it has definitely shifted, and it's not as fun anymore.
Have you guys had the privilege of, I mean, for 24 years in business,
yes. Mm-hmm.
The privilege of seeing your client base grow?
We've seen our client base grow. We've seen our client base shifted. But my look on this is your good client is always a step away from being a bad client.
Oh, 100%.
And the good client is a step away from not being paid and going under. So it's quite a tricky way. And I also say, and this is just a personal reference that I make, is that when it's time to pay, there's a lot of people you're going to pay before you pay the rental company. So we really have to stay on top of things. You don't pay the cement truck, it's not coming, but you pay the rental company, we will give you a little bit of a leeway. So it's a bit tricky. It goes back to relationships, though. So it has changed. We had to learn, and I've been at it a little bit longer with the company than Phil has, but we've had to learn about what a good client is, what a bad client is. We had to learn about when to take those risks and when to say no more. And there are people that I would give a lot of leeway to and companies that I would give a lot of leeway to, and my team would look and go, okay, they're into us for $1 million. Why is this continuing? And you're on me because this guy's into us for $100,000, you know? But it depends on the source. Is it a bonded job? Is it infrastructure, you know? Does the company have reputation? Is it a company that has been around for a really long time and they're recession proof? There's so many different factors that I have to put into that because we extend credit, right? 95% of our clients are running on a credit basis with us. So we have to be able to, and I remember years ago, I had a situation with MTO. The job wasn't bonded and I submitted my claim and the person that was assessing from MTO said, how did it get this high this quickly? You must have not paid attention. And I explained to them, they were doing bridge work. And three bridges were involved, and for each of those, I took a brand new excavator with an attachment, and the cost was about $30,000. The day we land that excavator, the clock starts to run.
Yep.
The first invoice goes out 28 days. Rental companies bill on a 28-day cycle. So now I've given you a bill. It's 28 days you've had my equipment. And now you have 30 days to pay that. But construction never pays on time because you have to have an approval, and then that has to funnel down to you. So now we're into month number two, and very quickly we could be in month number three.
Yep.
Right? So that's how now you owe me hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's not because I was not on top of things, but that's the cycle of...
Well, in all fairness to the MTO person, they're obviously not aware of how construction works.
Mm-hmm.
And
to ask that question.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right.
And you know, sometimes we're dealing with office people that are disconnected and don't understand. We are never paid in 30 days.
No. Almost. This is construction. This is big construction.
And then I talked to the bank, and they're like, your receivables don't look good. And I said, it looks really good. 60 to 90 days, it's good. You know, but that's, and so we budget. I have to budget into that, that funds are going to come 60 to 90 days, right? They're not coming in 30, 60.
I'd love for you guys to give us the whole grocery list of toys that you guys offer your clientele, right? Like how big, how small.
I think it's...
Because you guys are servicing big construction.
Yeah.
But you can also service small construction too,
we
right?
have a good mix. We carry, as Camille has spoken about, heavy equipment. So that we're going to talk about. We have large excavators from... and what I would consider a large excavator might be different what somebody else does. For me, anything 20 ton and up... to me is a large excavator.
That's big to me.
Yeah, 20 ton, anything lower than 20 ton, you'll have people out there in the industry call it a mini, so we carry all those sizes. Aerial equipment, we have a full mix. Telehandlers, earth moving equipment, skid steers, excavators, right down to small generators, chipping guns, saws. Just a good mix to, if you were a general contractor working in the GTA, you could come to us and we can provide you equipment start to finish.
What's your circle? Like
so
in terms of area?
Yeah.
Southwestern Ontario, I would call it. So the GTA, it was a GTA.
GTA 17 cities, right?
Yeah. So. Golden Horseshoe. So okay. That's obviously helped by a branch that we have in Hamilton, Stony Creek, and one in Mississauga. So we're kind of positioned well to service a big portion of the GTA without an issue.
So I would say about 20 or maybe 10 years ago, rental companies were quite divided. So you were either an aerial, and we still have those companies that are strictly renting aerial equipment. So scissor lifts, booms, telehandlers. And then you had the heavy side, companies that would do dozers, backhoes, rock trucks, and then small tools. And there is still that divisiveness in the industry. But as the years went by, companies like Edge One popped up and said, well, how do I compete again? How do I compete? Well, and to this day, this is one of our main platform for sales is my basic premise is if you have a dollar to spend, I would try to take as much of that dollar as I can. Which means if you're looking for heavy equipment, I have that. And I have aerial. And we were huge general rental stores. So the biggest excavator we carry is 65 ton. That's a big excavator. That excavator doesn't go out very often. And when it does, it's not coming back a week later. It's going on to a project that'll last 6 months. 40 ton rock trucks. Those rock trucks are quite large. It costs $1 million to purchase, then there's the safety element. Can you use this? Are you aware of the damage it could cause? An 850K dozer, again, $1 million to purchase or 700 to buy one of those. Those things, they cause so much damage if used incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's a liability issue. There's a lot of things that have to go through. You have to be, it has to be insured. We have to be listed as a lost payee. The person that's operating it has to be licensed to do that. So there's a lot that happens in the background versus if you're renting a saw, right? Back in the days, we go in, we need a quick cut saw. What kind of blade do you need on it? It's a $35 rent. Here you go. Done. Off you go. Yeah. Those are different. And so in our organization, we have people that specialize in different things. So the aerial guys, that's what they do. The small tools, we have a restoration division. Restoration guys are doing grinders and generators, all the specialty stuff. Then I'm in the heavy equipment side where it's all about big iron, steel tracks, just floating. We have a float company, so we'll move your equipment from point A to point B. Again, we're a company that looking to take as much of your dollar as we can. So not only do we rent equipment, we have huge service center. So we will repair your equipment. Again, it's about that relationship that we have with our client. We will move your equipment. So you can order up a float truck and we'll move, you know, a 50-ton excavator for you. And so we'll sell, rent, or repair your stuff. And it fits in line of the theory of what a rental company should be. Rental companies come into a site because either you've run out of equipment, because all of yours is working,
yeah,
or you don't own something, you've priced the job based on renting, or yours has broken down. And so I need to fit into all of those. And sometimes, and we make this clear when we're hiring our team, when we're assembling, we're getting started for the season, we're a fast-moving environment. We're constantly pivoting because we're reactive. My equipment just broke down. I'm in the middle of the road. I need something to be here mm-hmm. now. I need you to pick up this. I need you to bring me something. I've got five guys waiting. So you have to be reactive. So when you come to work in the morning, a lot of places you walk in, you have your coffee, you go on your computer, start doing emails. For us, I might tell you you're starting here, but 5 minutes later, you're over there because you have to do that.
There's right? a lot of momentum shift
constantly,
involved.
Constantly. And our live schedule of what's going on is constantly changing. Every 10 minutes, the trucks are going in a different direction, right? And then there's external factors that we can't control, right? Yeah. And we're about to do a post that says Toronto to Toronto is an hour. Back in the days, we could tell you the truck's on the way because it'll take us an hour to load and to get there. Now it takes us an hour to get three streets down the road, right?
Crazy.
So we have to deal with insane, we have yeah. to deal with traffic.
There's definitely a lot of cost yeah. involved for us.
And you have limited routes as well too because of yeah. the size of the vehicle that's being transported,
true.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
So you yeah. can only go to certain roadways and all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
and
right?
we have to spec that out, right? We have a whole logistic department. We have to pull all the permits. The trucks are running. So we run on super permits so we can carry these loads at any time. But still, within the municipality, like in downtown Toronto, you have to be out of there by 7 in the morning because you can't have these big flow trucks with cars, mm-hmm. right? Or going down tight streets. So you have a truck driver that's taking a machine down. There's cars parked on the one side, the truck's stuck now. How
or even
get out?
Or even worse in the and you know, you get right deep into the city and you know, she's right, cars on both sides. And then add winter and snow to that. And we've had clients call in and say, I need a machine, I need a boom at you know, I'm working at a residential street, we're doing a roof, whatever. And we've had to unfortunately like walk machines down the street. You just can't get down there. You have to walk them down the street.
Next time you gotta do that, call me. I want to see it.
Listen, it happens. It doesn't happen, but it does. And again, your regular vehicle can hardly fit in that street, yeah. right? So we've done it before. Logistically, it's another issue for you know companies like ours is how to get to places.
It's right? funny how nobody really thinks about all these things that are going on behind the scenes that are so critical and affect that delivery.
They
just care about the delivery. They just want it on site so they can start the work.
It's a good point. Yeah. So the way we function or the way you have to function as somebody that you would call in sort of this industry is that when you take an order, for example, I think it's important to be able to, and I have, you know, the old school in the summers when I was a young kid, I would work with my dad on job sites, et cetera. So I have an idea of the essence of a job site, which I think is really important. And yeah. so you need to understand who you're serving and what that means. And you know, earlier she joked about a vibrator, but in all seriousness, if a guy calls you, says he needs a vibrator, like that's an issue. There's concrete there waiting to be poured. And so you have to take that into account when you're making the delivery or when you take that order. And so in our business, when you take an order, it's very important to think about that order front to back. What is it that he needs? Restrictions. Height with restrictions. How long do you need it for? Is there a neighborhood issue that's going to occur with this? Where are you going to store it? How long is it going to be on site for? You know, are you going to need servicing on site while it's there because you're going to have it there for months and months and months? And so is it accessible? How am I going to get it there? Right? Amongst other things, you know, do you have to reach certain, whatever? I mean, there's a million and one questions you have to ask. And, you know, we've been doing this for so long that these things just come up in natural conversation when we're taking orders from a customer. But it is definitely logistics is a key in understanding what the customer needs or what he might potentially needs. And Camille will tell you tons of times that you're having that conversation and what starts the phone call as a certain thing ends the phone call something completely different.
And that's the fun part of our job. That's the fun part of our job. Like, I would say a good 30% of the time what the client's calling for is not at all what they need. And it's not at all what's going to work.
Because you guys are never really given what their parameters are needed.
Right.
Like, you don't have the time.
We have to. We have to.
To give the specs and to figure out, okay, so what exactly are you building? I mean, they could tell you we're building a bridge.
We have to. Because if we don't.
You need to do that research.
We have to have. Yeah. We can. It takes a really skilled purchaser to make it quick. Most of the times, yeah. we have to ask questions because then it falls back on us to correct it.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil had Phil will tell you one about a 19-foot scissor lift. Like the scissor lift, it's called a 19-foot. It is spec'd at 19 feet. And it's meant to take you 19 feet.
The base of the platform is at 19
feet. Yeah. Your feet are at 19 feet.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell your story. And this is a perfect example of what we deal with.
Yeah.
Is it propane powered scissors there?
No, just electric powered.
Okay.
And so, you know, we take this machine. I mean, again, I say we ask a lot of questions. And sometimes I think it's important to not assume anything. And this is a clear case where maybe something was assumed. I don't know, but some things are just so over the top. It just drives you nuts. So we get to site with this lift, 19-foot scissor lift, takes you to 19. And the guy's like 15 feet short. And I'm like, but how high did you think it was going? This is a 19-foot scissor lift. Okay, maybe I should. You know what I mean?
He wasn't off by a foot or two.
And stuff like that happens all the time. And you got to minimize that stuff because, Manny, I get to site. Okay, so I site my truck from my branch all the way to downtown Toronto, let's say from Dixie and
so it takes him 2 days to get there.
Right. And you get there and it's the wrong item.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. Like, what are the repercussions at that point to salvage this customer? Because at the end of the day, listen, we're in the service business and it's not just about this transaction I did with you today. Hopefully it's about transactions we do in the future. You don't want to leave a bad taste in somebody's mouth, even if they do make a mistake. Is there a cost for it? Sure, potentially. But the reality is now that driver's got to come back. Whatever I had in the pipeline has to take a back seat now because now we got to take care of this. So there's so many repercussions if you don't ask the right questions, if you don't get the right equipment to site. Even the other day, I showed up on a site with a piece of equipment that, you know, where are you guys using this? And it was on grass. And I was like, you can't use this piece of equipment on grass. You can't do it.
Do you have sheets of plywood? Even that won't work.
Well, there are some pieces that at that point, it doesn't even matter, no. Right? There are certain aerial pieces that if you shift out of level, they will completely lock out for safety reasons. And so you're dead in the grass. Yeah. And so it's super important to definitely understand the job site, understand the customer, what they're doing, and then ask the right questions. You know,
Customer ask for a 12-foot ladder, step ladder, and then he can stand on top of the to get to the 15 feet?
Oh, man, no kidding.
So in those scenarios, what I find is they'll ask you for something and you say, I don't have that. And then they'll say, what do you have? And then if you tell them, so looking for an 18-foot ladder, and you're like, we stop at 12. And they'll say, okay, well,
they don't make a larger step 12. Or
I think they do.
16.
They
do. 16.
Yeah. They make it 16 step.
They make 16 A-frame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A-frame 16.
16. I think it's a platform. So I think at 14, there's a platform there. I'm okay. Not sure.
And then they'll say, I'll take the 12 and then I'll make it work. No, you can't.
No. Because that's a whole other world that you're indirectly connected to it.
Yes.
That if they misuse it and breaking MTO labor laws or Ministry of Labor laws, do you guys get involved at that point? Or
it depends on what our knowledge is, right? Okay. Our knowledge is, so here's one of the things that, you know, we have to be very careful with. We offer delivery service. We don't rent our trailers. We don't rent our trucks. So if you're renting an excavator from us, we will offer you to bring the excavator to your site or to your home if you're a do-it-yourselfer. And a lot of times, not contractors mostly, just, you know, maybe an independent will say, how about I pick that up? And then they'll show up with a trailer that doesn't have proper ramps or doesn't have the weight or doesn't have, and then they come and say, well, do I have to tie this down? And so right there is when we have to say, no, you can't load this. And then they'll look. And they'll be like, there's a ramp there. Why can't I use that ramp?
Okay. How do you
load and unload on the other end?
Yes, exactly.
And if you don't know, you have to tie down. Well, can you give me some rope? Well, no, they don't tie down with ropes. You have to have proper ratchet straps. And it has to be a certain weight. So there's a lot. So when Phil and I hire people, our team members, we've become similar to the banks. It takes months and months and months of training because we don't incentivize people by saying you're going to get a commission if you push out the rents. We try to incentivize people that the wellness of this company and the maintaining of the relationship. So it's better to be as safe as possible than chase that rent. So oftentimes you have to say no. Like, I'm sorry, we've offered you delivery at $100. Oh, well, that's too much. Well,
it's cheap.
But that's what it takes. Like, you can't move this equipment by yourself. And I mean, that's just one example of a lot of silly things that we encounter on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah.
People look out their windows and they see a contractor down the street on a boom chopping down a tree. And then the next call comes into Edge One, says, I'd like to rent a cherry picker. And when they start with the cherry picker, you know it's going the wrong way to begin with. I'd like to rent a cherry picker because I want to go up 100 feet. No, I'm sorry, I can't.
You need to be properly trained and understand this tool.
There has to be some
of
that. And
so if they say, well, fine, I own a harness, but do you know how to safely put that harness on? Because you have to have a harness on. Like, so there's a lot of liabilities with the rental company. So I think that, and I mean, I talk about being in rentals. People always say, you know, Phil and I are fun people. You know, we love to golf. We love to spend time with our customers. We're very active in the social world. It must be fun. Actually, there's so much in the background. There is the constant theft issue. When equipment's on site, it disappears. Who's responsible? Contractors want to throw their hands up and go, well, where's the GPS?
They don't want to use their insurance, right? Or what have you.
Liabilities. If something happens on the site, was the equipment used the way it was intended to use, or was there misuse?
Damage, yeah.
If it's damaged or if someone's hurt, then I have to deal with Ministry of Labor. But first, before it all even gets started, the condition of the equipment when it leaves the yard, our check and checkout procedure, everything has to be photographed, everything has to be documented, everything has to have service record. There is so much to go with.
Oh, so you guys are meticulous. Like, it's not like renting a car where I just stand there. It's been a while since I rented one. You just do the walk around and, oh, there's a little nick there. There's a little nick there. No, you guys are.
We do all of that in a digital world, right? It's all photographed all around, including the fuel tank, the tires, everything. Because again, in the funny world, we would send the backhoe with four tires. The guy would have it 3 months later. He'd say, no, it came with three. Well, no, it's not possible. You know, so. Well,
is it hard to see a new piece of machinery go? Like brand new?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know it's coming back.
Manny, I put one out today and I told the customer, like, wait, I'm sending you a new machine. Yeah. Wink, wink.
Oh, it's brand new
I'm
machine.
Sending you a new machine.
Look at the odometer there.
New machine. Yeah. I know how your machines come back from your site usually. I'm sending you a new machine.
That's how I bring it back.
It's like just a reminder. Yeah. Over
but
and over.
It's a good point.
Get your best operator on this new machine.
We definitely take a lot of care in maintaining and making sure that our fleet is in good working condition. Imagine we send you a piece of equipment and you got guys on site and that piece of equipment fails. The repercussion is not just the $200 a day you're paying in rent. Big deal. That's a wash. You know, you got 10 guys standing there looking at you making their $50, $60, $70 an hour, whatever they make these days. And the repercussions are huge. And you know, if I'm on the phone with you and stuff has gone south and I'm telling you, well, you know, I'll take care of the day's rent and delivery and pay, it means nothing. Yeah. The guy's literally lost thousands of dollars. So it's super important. I mean, does stuff happen? It's life. Stuff happens. But we put a lot of care into maintaining the equipment to make sure it works. We have procedures in place when it goes out, when it comes back. And it's definitely something that we take seriously about our business. It's a major component, right? Make sure stuff works. I think that's all that customers want. They want stuff to work.
Well, they're renting the machine for the task at hand.
They're giving you money for stuff to work, essentially, right? So,
do you guys have a preference on a particular brand?
On the heavy equipment side, and I mean, so COVID changed the way I think buying worked for equipment rental companies. So for years in the heavy equipment world, we had two that dominated. You know, John Deere or Caterpillar dominated on the big stuff. And then there's some really good brands out there like Komatsu and JCB and Case. But those two dominated. And then when I got started at first, it was sort of who wants market share and who is willing to buy down the rates. And it was about the financing package. And so sometimes, you know, Cat would be in Ontario wanting a bigger market share on the excavators. And then the next year you would say, okay, let's come to the table and talk. And I'd be like, I'm not. So John Deere would step in. So we would change. And it wasn't that we were brand attached necessarily because I could flow between the brands. But it was at that time, it was about financing and who was willing to do the extra steps. Who was going to give you the repair manuals? Who was going to throw in a bunch of stuff? The service packages. We needed that. We needed that little edge. When COVID came, the market shifted. And I had issues with some of my team members because we were not able to purchase. As an independent, they wouldn't feed us because I wanted three. They'd feed the guy that wanted 100.
Mm-hmm. I personally don't like that.
American chains, you know, whatever the case may be. So we were left to assess our operations and whether we had loyalty to a brand and how we were going to expand because there was nothing for me to buy. You'd go to the show, and if you were at the last show, you would see what used to be a scissor lift that used to maybe be two different colors. There's now six different colors. There's one that's orange, there's one that's pink, there's one that's blue.
A lot more brands out there for sure.
And the assessment comes into... It's affecting different ways. product familiarity for my staff. So my technicians and my mechanics now have a different brand that they have to be familiar with. We have the customer that has to be familiar with that. Our parts department now has to stock a whole different brand. That becomes
a lot of work involved.
And then the ROI, when the machine is sold, if you go to an auction and there's two excavators side by side and one is a different brand that we're not familiar with and one is a Caterpillar, you know the Caterpillar is going to command top dollar. Yeah. So I have to take all of that into consideration. And again, you're dealing with Cat financing or Deere financing, which they are very aggressive in their rates, right? So it changed the way we purchase and what we purchase. A lot of the small guys were like, okay, well, this scissor lift is going to be $1,000. And this one that I carry, we carry a particular brand, that's going to be $3,000. And there's a way to assess that again. Even if the products were available, when do you start making a profit? If you have the machine that's worth $1,000, you're going to be in a profit situation a lot faster than if you have something that's $3,000.
Yeah, for sure.
But I'll tell you that one that's $1,000 is going to last you 6 months. It's like walking into one of these department stores and buying a brand of a drill versus a Milwaukee drill, you know? And so, you know, how long is the product going to last? So there's a lot of little things that we have to. And at the very, very end is what happens to your equipment when the amortization period is over? If you've bought something on a 3-year or 5-year amortization period, what happens to the equipment then? So you can sell it privately, listing it on your lot. You can sell it at the auction, or you can trade it in to the manufacturer or the dealer, and you're taking something out new. Historically, that's how Edge One has grown. So we would go and trade in. So I have 5 excavators going in, 10 excavators coming in, because we weren't taking equity out. So
business-wise, it makes more sense to do that?
Yeah, it made more sense, right? So we were cognizant of that, and that's why we stayed with the brands, right? So, and it's worked well for us.
Yeah.
It would be walking up to a car lot, and, you know, cars are lined up. Mercedes, BMWs, you know, Toyotas, which would you pick for? We gravitate to a certain brand because we like that brand.
Yeah, of course.
And then even then it gets into attachments, right? We got to stay with what we have.
So why are so many brands coming into our market? We're such a small market.
Yeah.
Canada is such a small market in the heavy machinery segment. But yeah, you're right. I was at that show there and I didn't recognize half of the brands there.
Yeah, there's
COVID and availability changed.
Yeah, so she's right. And COVID didn't allow a lot of manufacturers, I would call at home, and I'm going to say North America, to produce and fill orders. And so that allowed offshore, let's call it, to start rolling in. And essentially what they do, it's not 100% what they do. I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but it seems like it's a carbon copy of equipment that already exists in North America. And they're able to mass produce these items and were able to come to market when nobody in North America was able to provide, right? And so they come with their shiny machines and honestly, and she's right. There was a point in time we couldn't get equipment and I myself was, okay, well, maybe we dive in and check what this is all about. And
it's a huge gamble.
Yeah. I mean, Camille's better business sense kind of, even at the risk of not growing during that time, and there was a lot of opportunity to grow, we stepped back and we said, well, let's wait till we can get from who we deal with normally and for brands that have brand recognition and we know can support their brand. And we didn't jump in. I think it's probably one of the best decisions we ever made. Today, not all, and I'm not going to speak for everybody, but in my experience, what I've heard through the grapevine is that a lot of these offshore companies, as these units, when they're shiny and new, they're beautiful. But once they start breaking down, oh boy, getting parts, getting people to repair them, getting response, it's not as easy as it is with local.
It's inevitable
brands.
That this machinery is going to go through that path.
At some point it will, right? Absolutely.
Because you're using these pieces of machinery to do things that is not normal to a vehicle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just they're really putting to the extreme end of that machinery, right? That tool.
I've yet to deal with one of them that will take a trade-in back on the product.
Yeah.
They're meant to be disposable, right?
On any of the new ones?
On any of the new ones.
Really? Right?
They will not. You cannot trade them back in. Yeah. So you're buying. That's the end. That's it. You go and acquire Caterpillars and John Deere.
But that's not good business sense. For you, I'm saying.
Yeah, no, that it doesn't work for Edge One, again, because we use the equity that's in the equipment to expand. So we were always taking two in and leaving with four or five, right? So that's historically how we've grown. So yeah, that wouldn't work. And this actually happens, you know, you'll take your equipment to the auction and it'll still say Edge One on it, or they'll figure out it came from Edge One. They'll buy to the auction, as is, whereas, for a deal, And then the very next day, they're in your shop going, but it doesn't work. But where's the operator's manual? But it's supposed to have a bucket. Where's the bucket? And you're like, okay, that's not quite how this works. So that's one of the reasons why I'm not in favor of selling at the auctions either. Like, you know, my equipment is maintained at the end of life. It's going to go back to the dealer and we're done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm just curious. I want to bring this up because I know that you guys, I recently found out that Still is going to be changing their entire product line to battery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's their mandate.
I hadn't heard that, but wow.
Husqvarna did that.
Husqvarna did that a few years ago. Tried to incentivize the contractors to come on in, give up your gas power tool that we know you love so much because it produces profit. Take this battery version, and I, from what I understand from the ones that I've spoken to, they all want to go back and get their gas power tools back, and they didn't want to deal with the battery anymore. Are you guys going to be facing that? Are you guys going to be looking at the smaller tools? I know that there's certain heavy machinery that are designed for certain applications, mines and other indoor applications that have tethered applications, right? But this whole quick cut and other small tools being converted completely to battery is not a positive for the construction industry, I believe.
I think that, you know, I mean, and I've done these lengthy discussions on technological disruption and how it affects the construction industry.
It's a great term, technology and disruption in construction.
It works in certain industries, and it doesn't work as quickly in others. Mm-hmm. And I dealt with this issue. I was at a cottage doing a presentation, I think probably 3 years ago. And my whole premise was that, and it was more on the education side of things, like we're all rushing to university when we still need to go to college and we still need to get into the trades. I still need you to come and work with me because today my industry isn't really affected by technology. I still need people to repair my equipment. I still need drivers to load the equipment and deliver them to site. We have no advancement in that area.
It's true.
And so when Husqvarna shifted, we were a Husqvarna dealer at the time when it was shifting. When it shifted into the battery, we struggled with that for a bit because the cost, people would walk in and say, well, how much is, and it was the trimmers that first came out, the edge trimmers, and then they got into the lawnmower. And the cost of the unit itself.
What was it, two times or three times?
It was two times for the batteries. And people were, so it just didn't make sense at the time. So they struggled with that. I'm no longer a Husqvarna dealer, so I don't know how that landed. But as a female, as a female that maintains my home, I walked all of my gas equipment back to my office and donated them because I couldn't start them. So there's benefits to both. And then there was, we have a demo of me using a battery blower. Do. You know, I was like, click, click, and then the blower's going where I had this killer, the best of the best in a gas blower that I couldn't start. And my shoulders would hurt. I would get tired of doing it. So it has a small place, I think, but we're not quite there.
Yeah, for me, Manny, I hear what you're saying. For me, it's not that it's 50-50. There's always, listen, gas equipment, you can't beat it, right? In terms of its power, of its durability, et cetera. Also the cost. But what we're seeing a lot, Camille and I, in the industry, the construction industry as a whole, there is a big call for clean equipment, especially when you're working in institutions or in situations where you can't produce any emissions at all. And we do have clients that ask us for that. Compaction equipment, saws, et cetera. And there is access to some of that, even excavators and skid steers. You know, you work in a hospital and you can't produce emissions at all.
Yeah. But Phil, what if, okay, I'm trying to, you ballpark it. I'm sure that we don't have this stat here, but what percentage is that call?
True. Not a big percentage.
Overall construction industry.
I find it is growing little by little, but it is
never
more,
surpass.
It will never surpass. And I think it is also just a specialty segment. So there's certain companies that do demolition and building.
But for the battery empire to start dictating to the construction industry that you need to convert all your gas power, like, you know, Olivia Chow, the puppet.
Yep.
Has already spoken about she wants to eliminate all two-stroke lawnmowers, trimmers, everything. California has already done that.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't sit well with me because the gas power machinery will last a lot longer if you have that serviceability connection, someone to take care of it. Trust me, I'm the same way. if I've got an issue with my two-stroke lawnmower, I try to fix it myself. I know what components are there to mm-hmm. do it. And then I know that it involves a wrench, socket, and all this other stuff. It takes a little bit of effort to do it. Mm-hmm. But my concern with the construction industry, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, yep. we push tools, mm-hmm. whether they're small or big, to such an extreme yep. because of the workload that we need to achieve yep. to get that task done. I think that the batteries will become a negative because you're going to damage them, which will overheat them, which create a fire, and this whole other. So then that will never happen with a gas.
There's definitely some equipment I could agree with. It's saws. That's definitely a piece of equipment that gets pushed.
They really
hard.
Want to push the quick cut yeah. into a battery application.
And then there's the concrete? Flip side of it. And I understand that we're trying to, you know, get green and what have you. I completely get it. You know, it's important to protect the planet. I'm all for it. But then those batteries, you know, what happens to the batteries? What happens to all that?
It's
you can maintain a quick cut. I know people had a quick cut for 25, 30 years. Maintained and works and whatever. They never have to dispose of batteries
There's
or
whatever. There's plenty
of
initials on that quick cut because yeah. of all the different trades that have used it. yeah. It's not just one set of initials, right? That's yeah. what I mean is that these yeah. tools last for a while.
They do.
On purpose.
They do. There is a place for battery. I mean, we all have,
but there's
I'm
a
sure.
trade-off. This is still construction. Yeah. We have to build certain things a certain way. And then also, you guys talk about equipment, you know, possibly breaking down or the wrong equipment showing up on site. Mm-hmm. And you're kind enough to understand that you're not so much worried about the mistake that was made about the lift being too short or what have you, if a machine couldn't make it to the core, to the site or whatever. Mm-hmm. Your first thought process is all that man, that tradesperson power that's just literally sitting idle
yeah.
for a day that they started and they needed to do work. Mm-hmm. And if they're not working, production's not happening.
Yep.
And that company's losing money, mm-hmm. possibly being fined by whoever they tender yeah. to. Yeah. That's what you guys are concerned about. Because you know that that equipment needs to feed them so they can work. My concern is with the battery revolution
yeah.
is you're going to have so many failures that production of tradespeople won't work as productive. So you won't be able to accomplish the scope that you need to accomplish with that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a barometer to kind of look at and go, if you send me this gear, you send me these cuts, you send me everything like that, all these tools, I know my team will take care of this task and we will finish this job on this time. We'll get paid and we'll move on to the next one. This battery thing is such a variable, like an extreme variable mm-hmm. for real construction applications. If you want to be the homeowner that comes out and mows the lawn once a week and do that, and you're charging that one battery where it sits in the garage the whole time, mm-hmm. great. But this is a construction job site, professional tools.
Yeah.
Surgeons do not use a DeWalt drill to operate on somebody. They have specific equipment to take care of the task at hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm looking at this going, this is going to be a failure. And then my concern, let's talk about cost now. My concern with still doing this is that they'll experiment this, they'll try to launch it out to the market. There'll be a percentage of the market that will gravitate towards it, give it a try because they want to be conscious of the environment.
Sure.
And then they're going to fail and all of a sudden they're going to want to go back to the gas powered. And what's going to happen to still is they're going to eventually have to go back to gas powered tools.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost of those gas powered tools will offset the loss of the battery tools. So yeah. you will see an increase in the cost of the gas powered tools. So that doesn't benefit us.
So we had this, you know, just very recently we had this with the municipalities. And so the sample size for these things being functional, sometimes they're too small or they're not accurate. So again, if a homeowner is using something that is a battery powered lawnmower or a blower, it's different than having a construction site heavy use. It's completely different. But I'm going to give you an example about green hoses. One of the municipalities about maybe 5 years ago decided the water hose, just a lay flat 2-inch hose, had to be green. Because it had to be environmentally friendly. So the latex heavy brown hose that we used for decades couldn't have them on the sites anymore. They wouldn't buy them. So municipalities will be the one that usually are leaders in the industry to say, this is what we're going to accept. You know, so if you are selling to us directly, then this is the only thing we're going to buy. Or if you're a contractor that's going to be working in our area, then this is what we want. I mean, tenders these days don't look like they used to. Now we have to declare, you have to pre-qual for so many things. They need to know what equipment you're using. Are you going to meet the noise pollution? All kinds of environmental hurdles you have to get through. So back to the hose, we went out and spent twice the cost to purchase these hose, and they didn't work. They fell apart. And then it seemed like someone got up one day and go, well, oh, well, we don't care about that.
I guess they have
we
to.
We just don't care about
they have to.
And that
they
was
have
that.
To experiment to experiment.
I think if politicians want to dive into the construction yeah. industry, I want them to sit down with us and prove to me that you know the construction industry. Mm-hmm. If you don't know the construction industry, then shut up. That's all. Like, I don't want to be told by somebody who doesn't know the construction industry how the construction industry should be. I don't. I will not yeah. respect it. So for them to just say, we want to be green and we'll give you a green and you're going to pay twice as much and we know it's sitting in the sun is going to crack and then fail and then now you got to buy, replenish another one. That's not good business sense. That mm-hmm. doesn't make any sense. But that's coming from a person who doesn't know the construction industry where yeah. that black brown hose is still working to this day.
Yeah.
Without an issue whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's us merging too, right? The new age, new people coming out of school with new ideas and just changing. And where is our society pivoting and how is construction improving? Because construction can't be the one thing over here that there's no improvement. We have to shift. And where are we shifting to? And I don't know if you're familiar with trench dampers or jumping jacks. Back in the day, yeah. it was always mix, right? Then they came out with two different reservoirs. And then they came out with an electric version. Then they came out with...
They made an electric jumping
they
jack.
They did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
The problem with the electric...
Or plug-in?
No, plug-in. Plug-in.
The problem with that is when we're measuring compaction.
Tripping breakers all day long. there's
attached to a generator?
Attached to your outlet or whatever it
and
is.
And even that yeah. we have to spec because we have to tell you it can't be on 100-foot electric cord because then that's not enough power, right? It's too far. Burn. And so, but then it didn't give the compaction. So they would not pass the compaction test, right? So yeah. it is one thing after
so
the
other.
It's
not a jumping jack. It's a tamper.
It's a tamper, yeah. right? And so, I mean, that is a perfect example of you trying to transition and the contractor saying, okay, well, I'm working in a building. How do I do this?
You're going right. to have a lot of lost revenue from business owners sure. that have set up their business properly where they've gotten to a sweet spot on how many crew they need, how many hours they need, and you're going to start to see a lot of loss calculations mm-hmm. happening at the end of that year. Mm-hmm. And construction, first of all, can't afford any losses these days. And they nor should.
Margins are slim.
Exactly. Yep. That's the reason why. We're not making a lot of money yep. to begin with. You've got the big players out there, right? The huge, huge players. I think last year Elliston was $900 million or something like that. Mm-hmm. Big, big numbers. And these are all backdoor deals going on with government officials and they're getting contracts. That's great. But the majority of construction is not making huge loads of money. So when they have a loss, it hits them hard.
Sure it does.
And like you said earlier, which I really appreciate that you said that, there's a good chance that they'll become bad and eventually go out of business. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we want. Yeah. We want businesses to strive and just work and continue growing. And that's why I was asking you guys, you've seen these companies grow along with you guys. Mm-hmm. And you encourage that. You want that.
Sure.
That's important to us, right? We don't want to stifle this company or these little shops. We want them to grow into medium-sized shops. And then even bigger and be competitors to big boys. Mm-hmm. We have enough land for all kinds of construction.
We do.
Sure, we do.
And we should be looking inward instead of outward. We should be looking at and focusing on bigger infrastructure. I've always said on the show over and over, we need a tunnel from 427 to the DVP to bypass the core. Where maybe that tunnel during certain hours, rush hours, it's all transport trailers.
Oh, today more than ever. Are you kidding?
All transport trailers going through there, shipping yeah. stuff to the east end of town, shipping stuff to the west end of town.
Yeah.
Like that would be such an invaluable, like hugely efficient for the industry. We need more of that stuff.
Yeah.
Because the problem is all we're doing is we're approving towers to just be built in the most difficult areas of the city to get the tools that we need to build these places. Mm-hmm. So that's like someone needs to think about the construction process. And unfortunately, to my knowledge, there isn't a single politician that has any construction experience that's got a voice in Parliament.
I mean, would you tell Austin Matthews how to play hockey? No, exactly. And that makes a lot of sense.
Professionals are professionals.
That makes a lot of sense.
As that. And yep. politicians are probably the one group of people that have the least amount of experience for everything.
Yeah.
They think they know a bit of everything, but they have the least amount of experience of everything. Especially construction.
I think a part of that is the way we viewed construction years ago. You know, we view doctors as...
The stigma's still attached.
Yeah.
We view doctors as highly intelligent. Oh, you went to medical school. You are trained. You have a postgraduate degree. And then we go to lawyers and we go along the field to all these, you know, accountants. And then we got a construction guy. What did you do? I dropped out of school when I was 16 and I've been pushing a wheelbarrow since. And it doesn't matter that you have all of the necessary knowledge and skills to do the job, and you're really good at it. It's just that you didn't have a degree. And you worked your way up. And so we didn't have any value attached to that. So construction wasn't one of those things. So I think they look at it the same way. You don't need any qualifications. Yeah, there's an engineer, and he's just going to tell you the wall has to be there, and that's about it. Well, we respect the engineers. Again, they have the university degree, but for the rest of the world, and people that are, you know, the guy that's in the roller or the guy that's in the excavator, well, he's a nobody. He has no skills. He's not educated, you know? So I think that's where
that machine there's that is hard to drive. Right?
Oh, absolutely.
But I will tell you, and this is one of the things that I say, and I mean, I'm a proponent of two different things. First of all, female in the industry, and the second of that, the trades, there's a lot of good opportunities to work in the trades. Yeah, it's 100%. A phenomenal industry to be in. Even in the rental industry, there are so many different ways you can come into the rental industry and you can branch off into different things. Mm-hmm. Being a heavy equipment diesel mechanic, I think, puts you at the top of the pay scale in terms of mechanics, right? Unless you're working at the nuclear plant, this is the place
to be. It's almost a three-figure hourly rate.
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
And the same thing about the truck drivers, these float drivers. You know, we're hauling such big loads. Of one of my trucks that's probably worth $500,000 could be carrying a $2 million or $1.5 million is the value of the equipment on it. Wow. The person that is driving that truck has to be so very careful. They don't stop as quickly. They take wider turns. People are cutting them off. There's a lot of skill and patience required there. So they make good money. Those are really good careers. There's a shortage in the industry. It's very unlikely that you're going to be a construction worker and go, oh, I can't find a job because we're so short in the industry. So there's those opportunities there, but it's how we market it and how we respect it. And I don't think construction is well respected, right? It's seen as a thing that you do when you have nothing else to do. And we need to step away from that. And we need to acknowledge that we need to welcome people into the industry and we need to invest into people. We do that at Edge One. We have different levels. You can come into the organization and be an entry level. The very, very first starting position is to be in the yard. And that is just to maintain the equipment in terms of washing, checking it in, checking it out, parking it so that the truck drivers can go. From there, we have a meeting with you. Where do you see yourself in this organization? Where do you see yourself in a year? Where do you see yourself in 3 years? Mm-hmm. Where do we allow organic growth and where do we support you? Do you want to be inside sales where you're on the phone writing orders, taking calls from the customers? Do you want to get into trucking? Do you want to get into logistics? And so do you want to get into the shop? But you can't start in the yard and stay in the yard. You have to move around. And so we welcome people to come in. And we welcome women, we don't have as many, to come into the industry because it's a great industry to work in. I champion the cause. I love my industry. It's done well for me. Again, it was something that I wasn't used to. I had to learn it. Does our political arena see it that way? Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to definitely echo what Camille's saying, that even in the rental industry or construction equipment rental industry as a whole, it's not really looked at maybe as an industry that you could build a career with, but you can. And I know that a lot of, you know, even myself, I went, you know, you go to high school and school and everybody's always pushing you the professions, which is fantastic. Nobody really pushes the trades. I've heard you speak about that on your show before. And it's definitely lacking in our society where we push trades and understand that there's a lot of value in that. Myself, I started in this business as a part-time employee, right?
Edge One.
With another firm. Oh, okay. I've been with Edge One for 10 years. It's called almost 10 years. Anyway, but I did start as in 20 odd something years ago as a part-time employee and just worked my way up to where I am today. So there are definitely career paths in this industry that a lot of people don't think about. And there's a lot of national big multi-billion dollar companies in this market segment for rental equipment that allow that. So it's definitely something people can think about. And again, you don't always just have to fall into that narrow channel of you need to be a professional, a builder, plumber. I tell people all the time, I wish I had taken plumbing. I wish after high school, I wasn't pushed in the direction. And, you know, we have certain pressures in like, you know, go to university, you're going to do this and that. And you look back at it. And I tell people all the time, you know, I wish I'd gone into a trade. Right. And so
it won't hurt you.
Definitely like
in your early 20s and you experimenting with trades and just getting a dabble of the industry for a year or two. You know, it won't hurt you.
It definitely wouldn't hurt. And you see a lot of recent graduates come out of school, even when I came out of school. And what's the employment look like? Like, what are you going to do? And, you know,
barista.
I was going to say, I mean, I respect people that get the degree and that's fine, higher learning, et cetera. But to me personally, with the exception of four or five professions, why?
Yeah.
You know, Right.
I mean, when I say it won't hurt you, it's like, I think you'll meet a really interesting bunch of people.
Sure.
And you don't know where that will take you in life. And then also you'll actually learn a few things where, mm-hmm. I mean, I've experienced this, and I've had plenty of people on the show talk about how they work for clients who don't even know how to hang a picture. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to put a screw into the wall to hang a picture. Like, I don't understand that. Like,
but they used to have in school, I remember they used to have shop.
It doesn't, they're far and few, right? Like when you walk into a high school, I was part of a presentation at St. Augustine in Brampton there. I was invited to go talk to the kids about it. And I was engaged with it because the group of kids, they were asking questions. And I encouraged them. I wanted to get more and more questions being asked, right? Mm-hmm. And they had their selection of what trades they wanted to get into. And there was, out of the group, there was one or two that wanted to get into architecture, and one was a female, one was a male. But the other ones were all talking about getting into framing or finished carpentry, mechanical HVAC. So they were looking at more of the recession-proof trades, right?
Yeah.
Which I explained to them. I was going, you guys are on a good path here because you'll never be out of work. Yeah. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. Right, you can make six figures really quickly once you get your licenses all in check and you've done all your hours. You will be making six figures within your third or fourth year of working that trade. Yeah. And sure, that's appealing to a 20, like they were 16, 17 year olds, right? To your point about the females, I just had a thought about, wouldn't it make sense, or wouldn't they do really well as heavy machinery operators?
They do.
I assume they would.
They do.
But are we seeing an increase?
But how do we attract people into the field, right? How do we? And I mean, we've done over the past, I would say maybe 8 or 10 years ago was the first time that I encountered, you know, a situation on a job site where it was winter and there was coveralls and washroom breaks and separate toilets, you know, outhouse or facilities for male and female. Like that only happened 10 years ago. You know, so we're a little bit behind in terms of welcoming people into the industry and or women into the industry. And, you know, there's still a lot of things that are tabooed. For instance, you know, like how old are you? I don't know that I want to invest into you because as soon as I invest into you, you're going to take time off to go have a baby. And now I'm going to lose you. We're still dealing with those little things. Yeah. We're still dealing with the, you know, if you are a young mom, you have to leave the site. Well, construction is a short season. We need you to work 10 hours. So the barriers are not glaring. They're there. We just have to find a way to overcome them. We have to be a little bit more flexible. You know, we have to step away. And I personally experienced this many a times, most recently probably 3 years ago, where someone walked into my office, had called us and said, I'd like to, called us and said, do you have an excavator? Yes, we do. A particular size. It was like a 5-ton excavator. Do you carry those? Yes, we do. How much is it? We gave them a price. And then they drove to the location and said, I'd like to rent that. Well, that day we didn't have one. And they were like, but I drove here. And the clerk said, well, you drove here, but not because I told you to, but I don't have one. If I have one, I would gladly rent it to you. Yeah. And that person became irate and said, well, you know, could you go, I don't want to talk to you, go get the manager. So out comes me and saying, how can I help you? And gives me the story. And I said, well, I can't make an excavator. We don't have one for you. So what are our options? Can we give you one tomorrow, the day after? I don't like your response. Go get the owner. And I said, good for you. Today's a good day. I would be that person as well. That did not work. And they said, no, you could not possibly be. And I said, and why would that be? Why would that be?
Right? Stigma.
Definitely.
So I think like the battery transition that we're going through, I think women are coming into the industry, but it starts at a very young age. It starts in high school. It starts with us telling them that it's okay to pick up tools. It starts with people like me going into schools and speaking to people about being in non-conventional roles. It's okay to be a female, leader. At one point in time, almost all of my crew was older than me, and then all of my crew was younger than I am. So
is that what happens?
It happens to all of us.
I've not been fortunate enough to staff fully at 120 staff at one point. I still, at best, would have 3 or 4 females. And we don't have to be in clerical roles. We don't have to be in support roles. So for the people that walk into my building and say to me, go get the owner, and I expect you to be a support to him, that's not a good way to look. And so no. we have to educate people, and we have to have that dialogue. And so, you know, we welcome people to come in from schools, to come in, you know, I will actively participate in the community to encourage people to come. But again, those barriers have to start even having dinner with your parents and having your parents tell you that if you choose to go into trades, that's okay, I support you. Instead of, no, you can be a teacher or a nurse.
I've had somebody on the show talk about how the parents of today have become barriers now, right? And it's a big concern. It's a very big concern. And I see it. I see the value behind that statement, because they worked so hard to provide for the kids that they don't want the kids to go through that. If the parents are coming from construction, right? So we're talking about a generation that would have been the offspring of the generation that possibly was the immigrant that came here and started in construction 70s and 80s. And now they've had children and they got into construction because it became the family business. And then they learned, but now you're getting that generation saying, I don't want my child working in construction. And you shouldn't be.
So it's frowned upon, you think?
Yeah, they don't want them to work hard.
Right.
Here we go. We have a generation that's not working hard.
Well, first of all, we're having a missing generation because the labor shortage is unreal. You know, I'm not sure what happened here, but the labor shortage that we've experienced in construction, not just skilled, but at some point in time, we're just looking for a person with a pulse. It's gotten that bad.
And
willing to train, willing to invest, and there's just very slim.
So because of that idea, you think it's going to get even worse?
I think it's going to get worse, and I don't think there's ever been a labor shortage, because there's always been a labor shortage.
Well, there's people out there.
I've spoken to Jim. I've been fortunate enough to speak to tradespeople as old as 80 years old, as young as 15 years old, right? And that labor shortage has been going on since the 70s, 80s, 90s. And I think what's different today, construction has so much competition when it comes to an option for your career.
Okay.
When we start talking about the digital age, right? But I try to encourage that, listen, construction is not just about swinging hammers. Like, there's a lot of that machinery that's being operated and needs to be diagnosed and worked on. You can be a tech person that studied all this tech and computerized and all this other stuff. You can probably come up with ways to improve this machinery. That's where you're connected to construction now. So there's so many different things that are connected to construction without being the swinging hammer person, right? So, but the problem is that we're not educating that. We're not talking about that. All we talk about is we have a labor shortage, so we need to get more labor in there. My concern with the government is that they only want to focus on the segment of the population, which is the smallest segment of the population, getting all the benefits to get into construction. I've had someone reach out to me recently, and I'm on the fence about having them on the show, because they're government subsidized and they only focus, because of the mandate that's coming from the government, on a less than 10% part of the population. And for lack of a better word, because I would just want to use this word, and I don't care if it ruffles feathers, they don't want to incentivize white people to get into construction. They want to focus on such a minority to get into construction. And my thought process is, they really don't want to get into construction, but that's the group that you want to go after. Like, I had a problem with Harper, probably the only problem I had with Harper. He had this initiative from Ireland where he made the Irish come to Canada, farmer, hardworking, and they all got into construction. And that's when I was in construction, and I saw so many hardworking Irish people that got into the hard skills, the masonry, the foundation, the underpinning. And I was like in awe, because I grew up with the mindset of Portuguese and European and Croatian and all those people doing that task. And now you've got a whole group. The move that he made towards the end of his term was he started kicking them all out and back to Ireland. And I'm like, they're working hard. Why are you kicking the hardworking people out? And now you want to go after the people that don't really want to work hard. And you're giving them funding and grants and all this other stuff. So I explained it to this person. And I go, you need to prove to me that the people that you're trying to get into the industry are staying into the industry. And you need to tell me how much of the government subsidized is going towards this person. Because if I go back to your point about investing into this young generation, and I put in, lack of a better argument, $1,000 into this person to come into construction, and then all of a sudden I train them, teach them, pay this money, and they don't stay in construction, what's the point of me spending that money?
Sure. Where's your motivation?
I'd rather go to a white guy, just for the sake of saying white, and I'm grouping that as just the core op people that are in construction, that love construction, give them the $1,000, because I'm pretty sure they're going to stay for 10, 20 years. And I honestly believe that this younger generation is not staying past 15. I think they're getting out before then. So yeah. That's not what my parents were
in like, the construction in industry. They're getting industry. Out and getting yeah. into what? Like just
they're getting into something else. And yeah. I think that they're doing is because of they're beating their bodies to a point.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. But there's yeah. I've had plenty of health people on the show. I've had, you know, all kinds of doctors on the show. And mm-hmm. we're talking about, you know, proper adjustments with your body and how to maintain a healthy mm-hmm. construction body. Right. Where it's like I'm 52 and I move a lot better than a lot of 20-year-olds that are in this industry
sure.
because they're doing so many things that are wrong. Right. So I'm trying to educate them going, guys, don't do these things. This is affecting your body. So they start looking at their careers when they're in their early 30s, mid 30s. And they're like, I'm tapping out before I'm 40. That's the 15, 20 mark. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, my dad's generation was there as a lifer. They were yeah. there until they literally physically could not swing the hammer.
Yeah.
That's when they stopped. Right. And if they could have continued, they would.
They would have continued.
I mean, we have that. I think that's our biggest drawback that I can think of in the mechanical side of things. This is the mechanics that are out there in the elements, right? They have problems with their fingers.
Another and great this. Trade.
But at some hard. Point in time, 20 years into it, they're like, yeah, I'm done wrenching. I want to be a service manager now. I want to be a parts person.
But that and should be the evolution, though, because you know yeah. what? They have the knowledge. And that's where I was, I'm trying to get traction on creating a mentorship program mm-hmm. where I want to take these older trades, mentoring these younger trades to let them know, listen, you'll be a mechanic, you'll work on heavy machinery, you probably work for the company like Edge One, mm-hmm. and then you'll learn everything about engines, everything about machinery when you're young, and you'll have that knowledge, which basically for argument's sake, you can go anywhere in the world
yes.
and sure keep that knowledge and actually find employment. So if you want to just pick up and leave and go someplace else, you have that knowledge. But then once you learn all that, you can manage that team now. So now you no longer have to swing the hammer and physically do that and destroy your body, but you have the knowledge and use it that way. That's what I want to see is I want them to quit the physical portion after 10, 15 years and start doing the mentorship portion mm-hmm. in their later years. But they should be compensated by the government. I would take all the money, $77 million away from OYAP and give it to a program like that. Because the amount of older people we have in this industry that have so much knowledge but they physically can't do the work are not teaching the younger generation.
Right. Yeah. And how do we get that knowledge transferred? How do we get that knowledge
They have to shadow them. They have to be on a site.
Sure they do.
When I talk about technology and how it affects the industry, you know, that's a point there too is, you know, remember what an excavator looked like 20 years ago versus what it looks like now. We actually have technicians, and this goes back to basic math. You can't hire a 20-year-old and expect 20 years of experience, right? That just doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So if I hire a 40-year-old with 20 years of experience, where does that land on knowing something that's older
yep.
versus something that's newer? So a perfect example is the new remote control rollers that we have. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the days, those rollers were a lot easier. They're, you know, you carry one or two per company. They're a high demand when you're in a trench. Those rollers now, if you open them up, because you can be way up on the trench, you can't be in the trench with them. You can't.
I walk away if I open it up.
Layers and layers and layers.
No idea what's going
right?
on.
So yeah. my technicians, the best in the industry. Guys that have been in the industry for so long, they were like, this is all computerized. I don't know what to do. And so now my service trucks and my technicians are going around the way we remember trucks being. You know, my Porsche's gone down. The guy comes in. He's got to go back to the dealership. He's got to connect it and read it, right? It has to go back to the dealership. I'm always at Bud's. Now that's how equipment is. We have to plug in. Like,
then yeah. we can entice software. An entire generation that is so computer savvy about that.
Yeah. Sure.
Come in and be a part of the industry that way.
Look at Edge One for our operations. We're 100% web-based, including our accounting system. So the serviceability of our equipment.
But that's by design, tracking. Right? You built it that way because you saw this all coming.
Yeah.
But again, we're still limited in what we can transition and what we can't. We can't transition our trucks and our drivers. We transition how we report to the MCO because we have the digital reporting now, yeah. right? Even though we didn't need to for local runs, we chose to go that way because we want to make sure that we are always up to date and a step above what's available out there. It also helps us because we can see where the trucks are all the time. It's a scheduling thing. But it allows you, so we're web-based for our software, so any of us anywhere in the world can log on. I could be traveling in the Middle East and I can log on and see what's going on at the office. I can measure things. We can do contracts. Our computer software also allows us to have the photographs of our machines going in and out. So you can call us and say, I rented this excavator 3 weeks ago. I have an issue. You know, this panel is missing. And we're like, no, on this day it was on this truck going this way. And here it is instantly, you know. So we've, all that stuff has gone digital. We can also, I do on my computer, sit there and I can tell you that this excavator that's parked at Dufferin and Rutherford is having engine issues.
Yeah.
The coolant is low.
You're connected to that, really?
Yeah, yeah. we do JD Link. Wow. So I can tell you. And if you think you're going to steal our excavator or skid steer, we will tell you that you just had it in Ottawa. We can track it as it's going along. So there's so much digital that's in there. So when it alerts to tell me that the excavator at Dufferin Rutherford is having engine issues, it's overheating, it'll tell me the severity, it's high, it's medium, it's low, then we do an oil sample, like we do blood work. And then we take that oil sample and we have it assessed. No, now we know what's wrong with that. So yeah, there is changes in there and there's a lot of room. But we have to start at the basic ground level, and at the dinner table, we have to say to our children, it's okay to go into construction. It really is.
Yep.
You can make more sometimes in some roles than being a teacher or being a lawyer. You can. You can be in the role. You can maybe even own your own construction company. But if you start to get into that field and you have to have those discussions, you also have to tell your children, you don't have to go to university. We don't all have to be there. It's okay to go to college. It's okay to go into trade school. It's okay to walk into a company like Edge One and say, can I spend the summer here? I just want to wash equipment.
Sure it is, yeah.
I do.
Then take that knowledge. Then take that knowledge.
You can come wash equipment whenever you wish. Whenever you wish.
Imagine going into Edge One and starting there washing equipment. By the way, I did that. And then taking that knowledge and say, I was exposed to construction. I know a little bit more. I know that while I was there, I preferred to do what Phil's doing. He is a problem solver. And the thing that Phil loves to do the most is to talk to a contractor and they'll give us a scenario. And we have to figure out what to bring to you. What equipment? How do we get you to have success? We're very project-based. This is the project. This is what we're going to do. We do that all the time. For example, before the Sky Dome renovation got started, we met with our contractor. Months in advance. Mm-hmm. The contractor is going to do this much of the work at the Sky Dome. We have to prepare. Is it called the Sky Dome? It is.
Roger Center.
Sorry.
it's Sky Dome.
It's Sky Dome forever,
and,
eh?
And, you know, we're going to need all of this equipment. This is what the project's going to look like. And so we prepare for that. And we're working with you, you know, and we start off with coffee and donuts and off goes the crew. And then, you know, we end the project with, it went well. Our equipment is back. You had success. You made money. We made money. We like the team stuff. So that's a really good way to go. So you can start at Edge One thinking,
yeah,
that kind of work is not for me. I don't like that.
It's not so much the work. It's just the environment they should be looking at. And the numbers thing never works. I always speak to the younger generation and I explain the numbers. Like when I try to coordinate the debt to learning ratio, mm-hmm. so going to university and choosing a different career and the amount of money you would spend and accumulate debt-wise compared to construction and where you're going to start making some serious money, the university student's going to be showing up at a barista. That's where their post is going to be because they can't find anything because there's so much competition out there, but they're also carrying all this debt. So it doesn't persuade them to go into construction that way. I don't understand it. I think that they're all trying to be more celebrities or social media driven or trying to find the next great idea that way so there can be a big bang for a buck when they learn something or they achieve something, a goal or something. Mm-hmm. And construction, I would look at it like it's a marathon. But there's so many opportunities to grow. And like I said earlier, you start swinging the hammer, but you won't end swinging the hammer.
No.
You'll be contributing like yourself.
That's why I asked you and you said they finish up, 20 years? I said, well, where do they go, right? And where do they go? I think naturally an evolution is what you're saying is maybe owning a business or project managing or estimate, whatever it is, right? There's like so much from that. That's why I say, and again, I don't say, you know, I wanted to be a plumber because, you know, I'm going to go and fix toilets all day because bigger picture is that plumber having 10 plumbers under him or a business, an actual, you know, a big success. And in a lot of cases, I see constructions now or the construction industry is very successful business people. Yeah. And it's not just a guy hitting a hammer, which there's a lot of value to, and we all have to learn. We start from the bottom, which I think is another issue in today's workforce is everybody wants to be in the C-suite immediately.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to put in the work. And everybody wants to come in next day and be the president of the company, which doesn't work. And I've had a lot of colleagues and friends that hire people. And after day one, green guy that just shows up on site, already with a chip on his shoulder, by the way, already telling and dictating how to somebody who's done this 20 to 30 years, how things should be done. And they turn around and say, really?
They won't go far, right?
That's no, absolutely not. And you know, do we call that? I know these days we say that a lot. And maybe it was in our generation too, to a certain degree. But sense of entitlement is a big idea or word out there where people just, they don't want to put in the work. They want satisfaction immediate satisfaction, right?
I'd love to chat about, and this is the one thing I really do hate in construction is theft, right? Mm. And my biggest problem with theft, and I'll just be honest, I think once or twice a week I'll get a message, DM or a text or somebody, and I just got one yesterday from somebody, his storage locker got broken into and all the tools are gone, right? Wow. And I know that your heavy machinery gets stolen all the time as well too, and other people's, you know, they've had, whether it's small heavy machinery or large scale or whatever, what I really hate, it's another contractor that has done this. Mm-hmm. It's not just some Joe Schmo off the street, right? And I can't stand tradespeople like that doing that to the industry, because that tool, whether it's a hammer or if it's a 65-ton piece of machinery, it's providing for their family. So it bothers me when it's stolen, because you're taken away from their family now, right? And obviously the thieves don't listen to this show. Maybe they do, I don't know. But it's, how do you guys handle the theft? Because it's not... I get the assumption here that it's not about the dollar value associated with it. It's the cause and effect to the industry that it happens and what it does to the industry as a result. And it just makes it harder to run a business.
It's definitely right? An uncomfortable conversation to have with somebody when they get something stolen that belongs to us. You know, imagine that you're my client and we've done business for years, and all of a sudden you call me, hey, I have a machine that went missing. It was stolen. Oh, by the way, now you owe me $20,000 to $40,000 for this piece of equipment. That is as uncomfortable as it gets. And you're right. The recovery from that is not easy at all, right? On our end, it is, you know, unfortunate. It's responsibility of our customers and clients to take care of that. I mean, insurance is involved in the whole thing, but it just leaves a sour taste in everybody's mouth.
Yeah.
It definitely does. And you can't walk away from that. It's very difficult. I have a story back way back when I worked elsewhere. I actually had a client come in that I had dealt with for years, and believe it or not, he actually thought that we took the machine. Not Edge One. This isn't a past life. He goes, I think you guys took the machine from center. Like, there is no benefit to do that. Even if I were to take the $20,000, $30,000 machine back, my long-term relationship with you is so much more valuable than something like that, right?
With theft, my one comment is, and it's the other side of it, is employee theft. That would be my single most disappointing thing, is the people that you feed that would take from you. And it's more prevalent than we think it is. Mm-hmm. You know, the saws that go missing, and then there are contractors that they don't even buy the small stuff anymore. It's pointless. You know, if we rent it, it has someone's name on it, you know, you have to bring it back, you have a contract, then we don't lose it. But if they were to go out and buy 10 saws, hammer drills, that stuff just disappears. We as an organization, we have stuff going. We know our staff sometimes takes the stuff. And feel like saying at Christmas time, how about I buy everybody a saw and then you can leave my fleet alone? Like, you know, let's just get to the point, right? Why don't you guys tell me what you need and, you know, we'll make it work. Mm. But yeah, it can be disappointing because, you know, for us, we want to be partners with the client, right? And so when something goes missing, we want to be able to correct that right away. We actually had, earlier this year, we had a really unique, and Phil was there, he was on the ground with it, but we had a contractor, one of our bigger clients, a great company, they reported a Kubota skid steer missing. So we're able to go online and we're able to find the unit, and it's parked by a train track. And so once we had the location, he hops in his truck and he goes, and another staff member goes. But then up comes this construction company that's working on the road, and they're opening the manhole and they're doing stuff all of a sudden. And he's looking right, looking left. It was the contractor. They just sent some guys to pretend they were working because they wanted to know what was going on with the machine. So this was a contractor that went above and beyond, didn't just make the phone call to say, hey, the skid steer is not there, can you track it for us? But then once they were told, they didn't say, it's your problem. They actually went out and they investigated. Did we have another contractor that partook in this? Did we have our employees that partook in this? So the way they looked at it was a little different. I think we need to do that a lot more. But here's the other side of this. Who's buying the stuff?
Yeah.
Who's buying the stuff?
At rock bottom prices.
Right? True. When they break into my store, they'll grab 10 saws. Back in, I don't know what the saws are worth anymore, but let's just go with round numbers back in the days. They would take 10 steel saws. Those saws are worth $1,000 each. And they'd go down the street and they'll sell it to a contractor for $250. You're feeding that industry. When the mini excavators are the most common things, mini excavators and skid steers are the most common things to go missing. Who's buying them? We are. We're causing that industry. We're causing that market, that demand, right? Mm-hmm. And so scaffolding. Contractors will go and take down each other's scaffolding on job sites that are wrapping around homes doing brickwork, and they'll go down the street and they'll erect it over there. And the guys, I can see what you're doing. Where is the integrity in the industry, right? That's the one thing that I struggle with, integrity in construction.
Employee theft definitely is a factor. I just have a quick story. I have a customer that every once in a while will call me, and Phil, I need to buy 10 wheelbarrows. No problem. I got to put them together. I'll sell the 10 wheelbarrows. We also sell contractor supply as well. So we do have a division that does that. I'm like, okay, perfect. They'll be ready. Okay, Phil, take them to your back shop. Okay. And beat the F out of them. I'm like, what? No. I want you to go back there and beat the F out of them. I'm like, what's up? What's up there? He goes, if I bring new wheelbarrows to my shop, they're gone. If they're all screwed up, dirty, scratched, etc., I'll have them forever. I go, no problem.
It worked, right?
It definitely does work. Yeah. And I was just taken aback. Like, what? What do you mean?
It's true.
No, I can't bring new equipment. It'll be gone by tomorrow, right? And it is the most unfortunate thing is when the people you trust and you're loyal to and the people you support, you're giving these people work when they take from you. And hopefully it doesn't happen as often as we...
Oh, I like to think that there's karma construction, right? Where it comes back and bites them in the ass, right?
For sure.
I like to think that. I don't know if it does, but...
Like anything, eventually, you get it back. You get caught, you get whatever it is, right? But we like to try to minimize that, and we're definitely super appreciative of the employees that we work with, that's for sure. So...
I got to do the 12 questions, but is there anything else that we didn't touch upon? I love this conversation. It was amazing. We just touched upon a lot.
I think we touched on quite a bit.
Yeah.
There's always tons and we go for hours, but I think we did cover quite a bit.
You get how the show works. I like talking to clients that don't understand construction.
Yeah.
And they always ask me, how do you talk about construction like for an hour and a half? I don't understand how you do that. I was like, because construction is always different. Everybody's different. Everybody has their story. But everybody has different stories of what happened and what's going on and how they're learning. And so I'm just scratching the surface at almost 600 shows. I have many more shows to talk
and about. Isn't that another good thing about this industry as a whole, that not every day is the same?
It's not. Nope. You learn, young, old, you learn. Sure. Yeah. Simple as that. And you can improve,
yep.
right, quite a bit.
Absolutely.
It's worth it, so... Edge One Construction Equipment, 1-800-216-6663. You can get these guys at phil@edgeone.ca and camille@edgeone.ca, right? Yeah. And then on IG, it's under Edge One Equipment, Facebook Equipment Rentals, and on LinkedIn and Twitter. Ready for these guys?
Mm-hmm. Go.
What's your favorite construction word or phrase?
I pay you now.
When do you ever hear that?
All the time.
Favorite construction word or phrase? Concrete's coming.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
Least favorite tool?
Least favorite tool. Oh, a sewer snake for sure. We don't even carry them. That's how much I can't
stand
them.
How big is a sewer snake?
Could be 75, could be 100. And
what's the diameter?
Whatever it is. There are different styles and different types. But it's just, it's not for me.
So for me, there's this new generation of DEF fluid equipment. Anything that's using DEF fluid is
the
death of me.
I can't stand those three-letter words.
Yes.
And I can't stand that industry has conspired to only sell them in two units, but you only need one unit because the reservoir only fills one unit.
Right.
It's the dumbest thing ever. Yeah. But that it's done by design and by purpose, and I can't stand it. I agree with you on that one. What do you guys miss from your childhood?
Lack of responsibility.
I'm South American, so I would say freedom, just like roaming the streets.
That's it.
What construction sound do you love?
firing up of a skid steer.
Smell too.
Sometimes.
Yeah, engines for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Favorite beverage?
Red wine, hands down.
Hmm, that's a good question. You know what? I'm going to go with a little bit of my background on here. Sorry. Licor Beirão, Portuguese liquor.
Nice.
Nice.
Not aguardent?
No. I have childhood trauma with aguardente.
Really?
Of course.
Yeah, I never understood why the parents and the grandparents ever fed that to the kids.
We were all fed the
99.9% proof. And I was oh, my goodness. What turns you on and off in construction?
It's the payment issue. It's probably the most difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. What turns you on?
The waiting to be paid. You know, it's weird. No matter where I travel a lot, no matter where I travel in the world, I see construction equipment, I get excited. I am excited about equipment. I would be with 30 women at a conference and I see an excavator. I'm like, oh my God, there it is. And they're like, you are just the weirdest person ever. No. I love it.
Equipment. You guys are weird. I'm normal.
Just love equipment. Heavy equipment though. Like,
yeah.
You know, a hammer drill or a saw, nah, but big excavators, rock trucks, graders, loaders. Yeah. That's my thing.
Yep.
What turns me on? Relationships for sure. Meeting people. What turns me off? Sometimes meeting people. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. Red tape is definitely a pain in the butt.
Slowing the whole
for process. For sure.
Down. Favorite curse word? It's got to be some nice Spanish ones, no?
The king of curse words. Fuck.
Mine is like mine is really dirty. But motherfucker. Like, yeah, it comes out quite often.
It's pretty common. That's a common one. What is your favorite vehicle in the world? Any mode or transportation?
I've always driven the same thing. Range Rovers. That's my thing.
I would love to have a Ferrari.
Which one?
The good one. The red one.
Which one, though?
I thought you wanted a Corvette.
Listen, the Magnum PI one, okay? Leave me alone.
You're going GTO. So GTO? Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
I like
that.
I'll grow a mustache and everything.
What profession other than your own would you guys like to attempt one day?
I think I would be something that's not stressful at all because I've had a life of stress. I would design kids' clothing.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. Nice.
I would love to try to be a lawyer.
Such a depressing high suicide.
Maybe I just watch too much TV and courtroom dramas.
It's all bullshit. It's nothing to do with reality.
Don't break my.
I'm just letting everybody know. What profession would you guys not like to do?
I think repetitive factory work.
I couldn't do factory either.
Assembly line.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't do that.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you guys like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Welcome.
Congratulations.
Thanks, guys. That was a great chat.
Thank you.
Thank you for reaching out.
That was great.
This was amazing to meet both of you guys. Thank you for all the insight into this this world, which I'm just scratching, so it's really good.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, that's it. We're all done.